Welcome back to season 5 of the STEMblazers podcast. In each episode of this podcast, we meet new, inspiring women in STEM and hope to share that inspiration with young girls and women through our conversations. My name is Vivian Bovan, and I'm a STEMblazers alumni. I'm a design engineering student at Colorado School of Mines, and I'm co-hosting this season with my friend and fellow STEMblazer, Gabby Lockie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Gabby Lockie, and I am also a STEMblazers alumni. I'm a civil engineering student at Colorado State University, and I'm super excited to welcome our guest today. Our guest is Christy Lamar. Christy is a managing director at Deloitte Consulting with a focus on digital transformation. She has over 20 years of experience developing strategies and driving transformation change at large, complex global organizations. She is passionate about advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and also advocates for women to enter and stay in STEM careers using non-traditional approaches. Welcome to the podcast, Christy. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us what it's like being a managing director at Deloitte and what that exactly entails? And if possible, can you also tell us what your day-to-day looks like?
Yeah, so I'd say being a managing director and the day-to-day are kind of one and the same. So we have multiple career levels. Managing director slash partner is the highest level that we can get. And so that just means I've been there for a long time. And I've been fortunate to have spent almost 17 years at Deloitte and serving clients and each other in a kind of variety of capacities. My day-to-day is serving clients, like I said in my bio, like large global companies figure out how do they use technology to just improve their shareholder value? How do we improve the experience of their employees and their customers and ultimately just make more money and make more impact? I've said this for 17 or more years, like it's always a great time to be in technology. I think about the conversations we have around generative AI, and it's something that honestly, I think when you all were born, we didn't even talk about artificial intelligence this way. But it's great to be able to continue to learn and be curious and talk to our clients and each other about really kind of cool things.
For sure. Absolutely. Kind of to touch on the generative AI lately, there's been this thing where you could upload your photo and it'll create like LinkedIn headshots for you. And it's kind of crazy to see what AI can do nowadays. When you mentioned that, I was just like, I just thought of that.
It's amazing. It's amazing and it's also scary, right? So we think about, there's a lot of opportunities to use it within the enterprise. So we're trying to help our clients understand, like, how do they use data to prepare for what's next, to kind of skate to what they don't even know, but they use the data because the data doesn't lie. But also we know that there's a lot of, sometimes there's not trust in the data and the data is not necessarily as, air quote, clean as it should be. And so generative AI can also be scary, but it's really impressive to see the opportunity that exists. I think if people haven't tried ChatGPT, they certainly should, as well as all the tools that OpenAI and others are bringing. It's great time to be alive. I use it for as many things as I can personally, and certainly not with my clients yet.
What would you say is the most rewarding part or a favorite part of your role?
So, I mentioned that I serve clients as kind of my day job, but one of my other hats that I wear at Deloitte is I have the opportunity to lead women in tech for the entire U.S. firm, which means we have a consulting business and advisory and cyber business. We even have tax and audit. And certainly we have professionals and colleagues that live in our internal IT organization. And back, 16 years ago when I had my kids and I was working at the firm doing technology, I was not very common to have small children and be working in technology. And I felt very supported in my journey to be a mom and a parent, as well as be a professional. And it was hard for me to kind of navigate that. And so today I have the opportunity to really elevate the conversation for a lot of people, regardless of what their kind of personal situation is, but to understand that you can have a career, and consulting can be very complicated because sometimes I'm on an airplane or sometimes I'm working like 12 hours a day. Sidebar, sometimes I'm only working 2 hours a day, but don't tell my leadership that. But the reality is, like, I have the opportunity to tell stories around how do you get to be a curious professional, whether it's a technology discipline that you're interested in or engineering or even medicine. We could do that. We can be kind of gainfully employed. We can get to scratch the curiosity itch, but we can also still have our whole lives, right? And our personal pursuits. And I grew up in an era where the integration really of kind of your personal life and your professional life, especially in the STEM career, was complicated. And now we really have a dialogue around it doesn't need to be complicated. And there are so many ways that we can do that. And one of the things to get really to the heart of your question is what I'm most proud of is that we are starting to really create and curate new pathways for professionals, especially for women. But there are a lot of other communities of people that are kind of underserved and underrepresented in corporate America and beyond. But we can put in interventions to help create new paths for people to have new jobs, right? And technology is such an enabler to that. Like, you know, when you guys went, well, you're obviously in school now, but like, we didn't even talk about Python 5 years ago, right? Like, it was a snake, right? And you couldn't go to school for that. But we can teach Python to somebody that is curious and is, you know, maybe they had a career as an accountant, or maybe they were a stay-at-home mom for the last 17 years, but they're really smart and really capable. We can bring them into our jobs, whether it's at Deloitte or other places, and we can teach them Python, because we know that AI is something, and machine learning is something that is fundamentally transforming our world. And so we can give skills to people that you couldn't even get it in college before. And so it creates pathways to jobs that just are non-traditional, if you will. And we should probably stop calling them non-traditional, because you don't have to have a four-year degree necessarily to earn a great living. And I think technology, as a great enabler, provides opportunities to do that.
For sure. I definitely agree with what you said. It's really interesting to hear like both the company of Deloitte and like your perspective and how it's so intertwined with other stuff. Because initially, like, I was a business major and I did a program with Deloitte, and it was like a women empowerment case study. And I thought Deloitte was just with business. And it's really interesting to hear the other side of it. So I love that you said that it was so interconnected, and to see how interconnected it is. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what consulting actually is or what it means, because we hear a lot of the titles like consultant or consulting, and I'd just love to know what that entails.
Yeah. So, you know, there are multiple flavors, if you will, of consulting, but it's ultimately about understanding what keeps our clients up at night. Like, what are they worried about? They've got problems to solve, whether it's how do they figure out what the economy is going to do and plan for a downturn? How do they look at like a legacy system that's built on old mainframes that's really slow and they can't really extract data from it, but they know then the opportunity of AI, or they are, you know, implementing that new system because they've gotten rid of the mainframe. And we have to build a change management program. So it's about understanding what our clients' problems are, and we work together to solve that. And the beauty of kind of our career model, and like even to the point, like, you know, there's lots of levels. So I'm a managing director. We work in teams. We really move as packs, right? So I have a lot of experience doing tech strategy. And yet we will have, whether it's interns or analysts or even managers that are at different points of their career, we all work together to solve it, because I know some of the tricks of the trade, if you will. But I've been working and thinking the same way for 20 plus years. And how great is it to bring another professional who, like yourselves, that are, you know, kind of recently out of college or even still in college, and you think about things differently and you actually use technology differently to solve problems. And so we all come together to say, a client needs something to fix XYZ. And we were like, well, what about this? And what about this? And we ultimately design a couple of ideas, and then we pressure test them, and we like run models on that to say, I think this is going to work. And then we ultimately take those to the client and say, well, here are the options that we believe are a solution to your problem. You know, if you implement this, it'll take this long, and we think this is the impact, right? It's kind of the cost benefit of option A and then option B and option C. And it's ultimately like, I can give you a whole bunch of options, client, and you need to choose based on kind of your ambitions in terms of your outcomes and your willingness to invest in change. And so it's like, consulting is such a ambiguous term, but it's really like consulting them on the art of the possible and helping them understand what it's going to take to get from A to B.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that, because I've always been curious as to what consulting means.
We also send a lot of email and build a lot of PowerPoint decks.
For sure. Can you tell us about how your fascination with computers and technology began, and kind of talk a little bit about your career journey that got you to where you are?
Yeah. So I am going to absolutely age myself, but my father worked for the phone company way back when, and he brought home, at the time, was a 286 processor. And it was this big thing that looks like a VCR or a DVD player, which you guys probably don't even own one of those, right? So this big thing had big monitors, and it had, you know, less capacity than this phone in our hands have today. And I was able to honestly like start to code. I went to coding camp as a fifth grader and a sixth grader. And I think I really like the ability to think about like, it's telling a story. Like, how do you put bits and bytes and commands in to ultimately tell a story to get an outcome? And to me, it was, I loved a little bit of the binary, like you put this in and you get this out. Or you expect to get something out and it doesn't work. So you have to kind of uncover like, where is there error in your code? And it's like, for whatever reason, I loved it. And my father kept bringing home a 286, a 386, and they started to evolve. And it's something I just really, I didn't even realize that it was kind of different, if you will. And I love that my parents continued to like cultivate that curiosity and didn't say like, you're an anomaly because you're only the only girl at computer camp or whatever. But it ultimately started with my parents and really my dad. It's interesting though, because I really enjoy technology. I you know, we actually started doing keyboard in class when I was in high school, and it was like the easiest A ever because I was already so proficient on a keyboard. But when I went to college, I went to a university that today they definitely have a computer science program and they had engineering at the time, but they did not have like the right mix of kind of what scratched the itch of what I was excited about. So I actually am a communications major with a minor in marketing and PR, which you kind of look at the math and you're like, wow, how did you end up in technology? And the reality is I got the opportunity to go have an internship and subsequently a job with the first online Yellow Pages and then a local internet service provider. And that has been this very interesting journey. And even though I went to work for them in sales and marketing, it became very clear, and this is like the mid-90s, again, dating myself, that to understand and sell this and market this, I really needed to understand like the underlying kind of capabilities, like what's the foundation of the technology? So I actually went and got like Cisco certifications. I literally learned binary math. And it was fascinating to me. It got back to the like, how do I start to put the input to get the right output? And I loved it. And so that just became this very clear path. Like, you really like technology, stay that way. And over the last 30 years, I've had the chance to be in a very like hands-on the keyboard type of roles. But you know, as I started to serve clients, I understand like kind of macro issues in new ways. And so understanding like no career is linear, except maybe if you're a doctor, and I imagine even doctors don't even necessarily have linear careers. Just understanding a little bit of the like the art of the possible, like, oh, I think that's interesting. I want to go do that. You know, frankly, like I do M&A work for the firm as well. And that is anchored in technology, and we use it to do some of that work. But that's certainly not a communications degree, and it's certainly not a network engineer, which I became for a while. So that's been the journey. It's just been kind of all over the map and a little bit of a scatter plot. And I imagine that, you know, I hope to work forever, but I imagine that in 5 years, even I'll be doing something kind of fundamentally different, still with Deloitte. And frankly, that's the beauty of a consulting firm, is that you can do so many different things. But I know that I'll always be close to technology. Just something that's kind of in my DNA now.
I love how you discuss like that your focus was communications and marketing and PR, but you were still able to, you know, explore all the technology realm and like all the computer systems and stuff that you were interested in. I mean, you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but do you think that traditional undergraduate or collegiate programs are the only way to have productive STEM careers, or like having some sort of background in those?
Yeah, so I think it's one way. I definitely think it is one path in. And I will say, like, there are some careers that you fundamentally do have to have a four-year degree. Like, I think about, like, engineering. Like, you have to have certifications that are very important. You know, I don't want to go to a doctor or a surgeon that doesn't have the right certifications. So that is why degree programs are very, very important. But there are a lot of careers out there that you don't, frankly, you can't even go to school for them because technology changes so much, right? Like, you can think about, like, Python and Java and like C++ back in the day that really isn't even talked about anymore. Like, the technology is moving so quickly that it's hard for large institutions to kind of keep ahead of it enough in a way to have like a approved curriculum to do that. And so that's why, you know, technical colleges or technical programs or associate's degrees are really great, incredible ways to learn skills that are very marketable and in demand. You know, frankly, one of the things that we've spent a lot of time with, you know, COVID was a lot of horrible things, but there's also some great things that came out of it. You know, women left the workforce in orders of magnitude during COVID more than men. We lost more women in STEM than we ever have, and they're not returning to STEM careers if they do at all. And so we're in a little bit of this like capability, capacity, and talent glut. Like, we need more people. And so what we figured out is that yes, people have left the workforce and maybe they had to care for like an aging parent or even their children, but it's now a chance to say, I want to go do something fundamentally different. And maybe I want to go learn AI, or I want to go do cloud engineering. And again, like these are things that we, like, you need technical certifications, but you don't have to go to a university to do that. And so we've started to build what we call returnships, like bringing women and people back to the workforce. We'll train them and get them the technical certifications that they need, because they're not necessarily right away going to be sitting down with the client saying, like, what's the functional problem you have? It's that I need this data to do X, Y, and Z. And that's something you have to have hands on a keyboard and a certification, but you don't have to have even a 2 or 4 year degree to do something like that.
I love that. I really like the idea of internships. Like, I also noticed, like, with studying the workforce as I'm like preparing to enter it, like the numbers have dropped since COVID. And so I really like the idea of like having that support to encourage people to come back.
I was on the same boat when you said returnships. I was like, oh, I love that idea. And I like, it was my first time hearing of a returnship, but I'm just like, wow, we need to spread this out and talk about it way more.
You know, I have a very dear friend who lives down the street from me. She went to Yale undergrad, went to Northwestern, really talented and highly educated. And she made the decision, probably difficult, to raise her 3 children. And so now her children are, you know, in high school or college, and she's really smart and capable. And she literally has a returnship. She went to an organization, actually a competitor of ours, but it was kind of worked out great. But she went and she got trained in how to build, you know, machine learning models and natural language processing. And she's doing that now for a living, because she spent the last like 13 years like managing a household. Like, she's managed a budget, she managed challenges, complexity, schedule. She can do all of those things. And we bring them in, you know, the royal we as a, or like as an organization, or just frankly a culture, like we can bring them into our organizations and teach them new things because they're really talented. And so to give them just that new lens on the world gives them a change of scenery. It puts really capable people to work. And think about the confidence that comes out of that. And frankly, it starts to fill the critical skills gaps that especially technology, like organizations, like functions are lacking, because I know I keep anchoring on AI, like it's so important, but like everybody needs to understand the art of the possible. And we need a lot of people that understand actually how to design it and implement it. And like, we just fundamentally don't have enough.
Definitely. Another point I just wanted to like touch on is that you mentioned the C++, and my dad actually like majored in college with computer science and did C++. And he couldn't keep up with the changes because, like you've mentioned, like AI, like technology, like it changes so fast. And he ended up finding another love, but I just thought it was funny. I was like, oh my gosh, that was my dad.
He and I are probably the same age.
One of the hardest parts about developing a strategy to reach a goal is knowing where to start. Is there a process that you recommend to those who may find difficulties creating that strategy?
Yeah. And like, literally, like this is, you kind of asked me like the question, like, this is what I do with clients, right? And so it's a bit of like understanding the destination is where you have to start, right? So I will sit down with clients, or even like you, or, you know, a colleague or whomever, to say, you know, you're embarking on change. What is the ambition? Like, what are you trying to achieve, right? Like, is your ambition to find a job that scratches the curiosity that you have, that makes you feel like you're providing impact to the world, that you're living with purpose, and maybe you're working in life sciences, right? Like, what are the 4 or 5 things that are important to you? It's basically, it's like, what is your ambition statement? Like, what's the end goal? And then unpack that, like, what needs to be true, right? So if I want to work in life sciences, let's say, then I'm going to need to find ways to go work with like the Johnson & Johnsons of the world, or the Gileads, like people that are fundamentally working in that. Okay, so if I want to do, let's say, like design thinking, then I probably need to go get certifications or experiences in that. So what are the places that I have to go find that experience, right? And maybe I want to live in San Francisco. So how do I start to find opportunities in there? So it's like the ambition can be any sort of things, but it's the pick the things that are important to you and say, this is where I want to go. These are the things that have to be true. And you get back to the starting point, like, what are the breadcrumbs that I have to put into place to get to the things that need to be able to be true so they can get to my ambitions? And it's literally just the, what it, like, what's my vision? How am I going to get there? And then that's where you start from.
I love that, because I know that's definitely something I struggle with, is like figure out where to start with my strategies and definitely taking notes. But thank you so much, Christy, for answering those first few questions. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Wendy Merchant with STEMblazers. Fall is once again upon us. Cooler weather, warm sweaters, and the 8th annual STEMblazers Mocktail Networking Social. This year, we are shaking up the status quo. Our very own Allie Spray will share her thoughts and passion about creating opportunities for the next generation of women in STEM. We are beyond excited to have her. This event is all about building relationships between students and professionals working in STEM fields. When students meet and connect with professional mentors and role models, they can easily visualize themselves in non-traditional STEM careers. Past participants have shared this event is energizing and inspiring. We think so too. So mark your calendars for November 9th, and if you're in the Denver area, please come join us. For more information and to register, go to our website at www.stemblazers.org. This week's episode is brought to you by Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin is a global security and aerospace company that works in the research, design, development, manufacture, integration, and sustainment of advanced technology systems, products, and services. Lockheed Martin's space business works on critical tech for customers like NASA and the U.S. Space Force. Lockheed Martin provides funding and volunteer support to organizations like STEMblazers that support STEM career readiness and access for students from high school through the post-secondary years. To learn more, check out lockheedmartin.com/STEM. Now let's get you back to the conversation.
Alrighty, getting back into it. So, blazing the trail for the new generation of girls in STEM has been a process and a journey, and we know that you're working to foster opportunities for women in STEM careers to enter and stay in the workforce using non-traditional approaches. Can you elaborate more on what those non-traditional approaches are and discuss how those have helped you throughout your STEM journey?
Yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit about returnships, right? Like, how do we create just different pathways for people to come into organizations and jobs? It doesn't have to be the I went to college and I got this degree that's going to get me this specific job. And that absolutely still works. But when we think about needing more women in the workforce, more women in STEM jobs, we have to do things differently. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and expecting a different outcome, right? So it's the ideas of returnships. You know, I think about like, this is why I love STEMblazers and things like really like, how do we get in front of young girls in a time that, especially when I think about like middle school and high school, like it is not, and maybe I'm projecting, it's hard to be smart. It's hard to raise your hand and ask questions. And it's really important to be able to be like in a space, whether it's, you know, literal or virtual, to ask questions and be curious and be interested in computers or be interested in engineering or be interested in medicine, right? And to be able to see others that share that passion, like that's hard. It's a very difficult time. And so that's why things like STEMblazers are important. I love Girls Who Code. And the beauty is like, I see the proliferation of a lot of organizations that are really thinking about like, how do we expose young women? And frankly, we should be honest, like young women and those that identify as non-binary, like how do we provide opportunities for them just to see other people that look like them, that are in those careers or are talking about those things or that are peers, right? Because, you know, I was once a middle schooler and a high schooler. I am the mother of two young high schoolers. It's a hard time and there's so many pressures. And the last thing you want to do is look vulnerable and say, oh, I'm really interested in this, or ask a question that you feel like you might get laughed at. And so this is why I think programs like this and like it to just be a part of our DNA as a culture. And I think it's actually getting better and better. That it is just being embedded in the curriculum of our institutions, certainly within colleges, but now we're seeing it in high schools and middle schools. It's not just the summer camp thing. Like, it's fundamentally embedded into the culture and DNA. And so I do think that as we elevate the conversation and make it more of the day-to-day, that is going to create kind of these additional pathways that women will say that like there are jobs in STEM. I also think that we have to, this is an evolution, like continue to like broadly think about what STEM is, right? Like it's not just engineering and math, like science, like medicine counts, right? So do nurses, like it's all science. we need to be able to celebrate that because I, you know, people really understand what a doctor is, but that's anchored in science, like fundamentally, and that counts. And I don't think that we necessarily do a good job of saying that's STEM too. And everyone thinks the doctor is really cool. And so it's like demystifying some of that as well.
I guess, like, yes, I knew like a doctor is part of STEM, but I like never like associated it with STEM necessarily. Like, I've definitely seen that blockage where it's like, yeah, like STEM is math and engineering. And even like as an engineer, like taking my crazy loop to get to engineering, like it still never was like, yeah, that is engineering too. So I really like the holistic kind of thing of of STEM and supporting like all of STEM instead of just like bringing up those two topics to everybody.
I think it becomes this very much this like it's engineering and technology, right? Like,
yeah,
it is. And we need more people. We'd certainly need a lot more women. But the science piece of it, like we get it and we celebrate it. And so we should be like, it's all one, right? Like
right.
All ships will rise if we start to embrace it that way.
Definitely.
I agree as well. Yeah, that also caught me. I was like, I can't believe I like completely dismissed doctors or like nursing as a part of STEM when you mentioned that. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's so true. And then I also love too how you brought up, you know, like even like creating a space for not just young girls and females, but also those who may be non-binary or transgender and like also creating a space for them as well. So I love that you were able to like really emphasize like the inclusion and diversity there because it is really important.
Very fundamentally.
So kind of going off of that, you mentioned that you're a mother of two teenage girls. So does being a mother of two teenage girls motivate you even more to advocate for girls and women in STEM careers?
I think that's a big part of it. I hope that when they're my age, that we're not even talking about this, right? Like it just is a part of our culture. Like we don't have to try so hard to push the boulder up the hill every single day that it's easy, if you will. That's part of it. I also know that having been able to have a very fulfilling career and be a mom is a gift that I don't think is typical. It would not have been typical 16 years ago when my oldest was born, right? And so there's a little bit of like, how do I give back? Because I feel very grateful for the opportunity that I've had. And I do know that focusing on this, like women in STEM is like, it's people get it, right? And so it's easy to tell the story a little bit. But when I think about like creating opportunity and it's really about equity, yes, it is for women and we can use STEM as a vehicle for that. But there are so many other, problems as well as people that are underrepresented that don't have equitable opportunity that all ships will rise. So if we start to do things that are for women, then people of color will have the opportunity or people from different socioeconomic backgrounds that may not otherwise have had a chance to like go to college, we can get them jobs and get them very fulfilling careers that like creates generational change for their family. So it's a little bit of, not even a little bit, it's like all ships will rise. And so I know that it's very easy for me to say I identify as a woman in STEM because I do. It's hard for me to say I've been very privileged in my life. I grew up in South Denver and I went to a very large high school and I never really went without. And so it would be very disingenuous for me to say, I want to be able to help somebody that doesn't look like me. But I can do this in a way that hopefully creates opportunities for others and ultimately affects change.
Yeah, for sure. It's really clear that you are passionate about inclusion, equity, and diversity. What would you say are the most important factors of creating not only like not just a work environment, but environment in general that would really provide that inclusion and diversity?
That's like the bazillion-dollar question, right? So I think that there's a lot of things that we can do. And like you have to, at the end of the day, make people feel safe, right? Like it's about emotional safety, it's physical safety. And how do we create places, literal and figurative, that people feel safe, right? So if that's the workplace, if that's the school that they go to, if it's, the gym even, like people need to be able to go to things that are of interest to them and feel safe that they can be themselves, right? And that they're not going to be persecuted or judged or any of that. And people are persecuted and judged for liking science and math when you're a young girl, right? Or your color of your skin or where you're from and things that are fundamentally out of their control. And I believe that if we can start to create safe places, and this is why STEM Connector is great, like you're creating very safe places for people to be themselves and gain that confidence so that when they navigate to a place that they don't necessarily, that they have a little bit more anxiety, that they're, that they've got the confidence, they've got the tools to say, this is how I can be. And they'll bring their authentic self to whatever that might be. And so, unfortunately, this is a conversation that is taking time. But I do believe that, again, like one of the great things that came out of the COVID era is that we fundamentally talk about DEI and really equity more than ever and purpose. And it will, like, we are changing the world. It's going to take a long time. But I think that I look at the political landscape in our country, and not to get political, but education is so important. Education, literal and figurative, like people need to understand that not everybody chooses, if you will, like how they look or where they come from. And to understand and walk in their shoes and say, you are safe with me, whether you're talking about something or showing up and, you know, all, I get on a soapbox about it. Like if I can do this literally as like the thing I wake up every day for and spend like 24 hours a day, I would do it. But this is, again, like why STEM Connectors and similar programs are so important, because together we can fundamentally do more than everybody kind of doing a little bit here and there. Like if we work together, will make more impact more quickly than if we just gone it ourselves.
Absolutely.
So now it's time for the rapid fire question round. So we're going to ask you a series of questions and you'll answer them as fast as you can. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What did you want to be when you were 5?
I wanted to be a librarian.
Who is your female STEM icon?
A woman by the name of Janet Foudy. She is the outgoing chairman of the board at Deloitte, and she was one of my mentors early on before we talked about technology and women being different. And she's just an incredible advocate for women and technology, and I am forever indebted to her.
What is your favorite way to de-stress?
I run literally every single day, and wine.
What is your favorite book?
Oh, that is a hard one. I listen to a lot. So I have two favorite ones right now. All In on AI is a great book that was recently written by a couple of colleagues of mine. And I actually just finished a book called The American Wife. And it's a loosely based story off of Laura Bush. And it's really incredible just to unpack the kind of history there. It's like fact-based fiction that like, ask me in a week, I'll probably have a different story.
Got to add those to the list of books I need to read. What is something you've been wanting to learn?
I would love to learn Python.
What is a hack that helps you in your career every day?
So I think that there's probably an app for absolutely everything. And if there's not, we need to go invent it. But ultimately, like my hack as a professional, as a mom of two, and a wife, is I put literally everything on one calendar and everyone gets an invite. Like if my husband's invited, he comes. If there's a doctor's appointment, the kid gets the invite and everybody sees everything. And that way I don't have to toggle between calendars and I can just look on that little phone and it's all there.
And then what is your favorite song?
Oh my gosh. I hate to say this. I don't have a favorite song. I don't listen to a ton of music. I do like it. I listen to a lot of podcasts and talk radio. But I can tell you my favorite podcast, aside from STEM Blazers, obviously, it's Smartless. Highly recommend it. It's hysterical. I also love Dateline. It's all on podcast as well.
I didn't know Dateline had a podcast. Oh my gosh, I'll have to check that out for sure. And for listeners, now you have a new podcast to check out. But make sure you also check out our STEM Blazers Mentor playlist on Spotify, where we have all our guests' favorite songs all in one playlist to inspire us. And lastly, this is a question that we ask all of our guests. Standing where you are right now, what advice would you give to your high school self?
That every single girl is also worried about what everybody else is thinking about them. They just hide it differently. So just be true to yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode, Christy. We both really enjoyed talking to you. And on behalf of STEM Blazers, we want to thank you for sharing your story and inspiring girls and women to pursue STEM careers.
And thank you to the listeners for joining us for another STEM Blazers episode. If you want more information or to stay up to date with what we're working on, check out our website at stemblazers.org or Facebook and Instagram pages at STEM Blazers. We'll catch you on the next episode.